For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith.
And until we're able to put ourselves in each other's shoes, then I just don't think we have much hope of real change. And that change, for me, starts at the beginning.
That's United States Senator Chris Murphy, and by beginning, he's talking about schools and how to make them less segregated. He made those and other remarks in a video he shot from the back stoop of his Washington residence during the protest at the White House, and he disseminated that video via Twitter. Senator Murphy joins me now, and sir, you indicated in your video that schools, including those here in Connecticut, are now as segregated as they were in the 1950s, or at least they're approaching that level. How do you see that contributing to the inequality and unrest we see today?
It really pains me to watch what in many parts of the country is a resegregation of our schools. In the last 15 years alone, we have seen a doubling of the number of what we call highly segregated schools. These are schools that have almost exclusively students of color or almost exclusively white students. And, you know, that robs our kids of so many important experiences. One, we know from the data that integrated schools, schools that have white kids and Latino kids and black kids, the students just do better. But what we also know is that if you want to heal this, you know, very painful divide that exists between people of different races today, then you have to be able to put yourself in the shoes of someone who's different from you. And I just don't think it's enough for us to try to teach white children what it's like to be black in America today. They need to have black friends. They need to hear it for themselves. And so what worries me is that we're living apart more than ever before. We're going to school apart from each other and, more than before. And then we scratch our heads and we wonder why these police officers treat black people the way that they do. Well, part of it is because we don't talk to each other and we don't share experiences in real time. And to me, the place to start is our schools.
What motivated you to get out and do that video that night?
Listen, I have two kids, and because I work in D.C., they go to the D.C. public schools, and, you know, my oldest will go to a middle school next year that has, I don't know the exact percentages, but pretty equal numbers of black students, white students, and Latino students, and he's looking forward to that experience, and I think it's important for him. So, you know, as a parent, I want to make sure that my kids, you know, don't grow up compartmentalized where they only hang out with kids of the same race or the same religion or the same income bracket, because I just don't think that that gives them, you know, the education or the perspective that they should.
Right now, you have a lot of local funding of school districts. What can be done on the federal level when local funding of school systems is accepted in America as water is wet and sky is blue?
I think there is a limit to what the federal government can do here. What I have proposed, and this is going back several years, I've had a piece of legislation that would set up a federal fund to support voluntary income and racial integration programs at the local level. Connecticut actually has a lot of these programs, but they tend to be pretty underfunded. We have a program called Open Choice, in which kids in Hartford can choose to go to school in, you know, Avon, or kids in Farmington can choose to go to school in Hartford. And, you know, that program costs money. And so federal money for programs like that would certainly help. And then I think we're going to have to start to look at other creative mechanisms by which the federal government can really put some pressure on states to, you know, think differently. I don't know that the solution is for the federal government to mandate a one-size-fits-all approach to desegregation, but we can certainly think about some incentives from Washington.
Well, it still almost seems like in order to desegregate the schools, you have to desegregate neighborhoods. And what is your sense from talking to people, how much will there is in Connecticut to desegregate on that level?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of will in Connecticut. And, you know, I think it's really important for the white allies of the Black Lives Matter movement. And there are a lot of them. You know, I've seen them out there at the protests in Connecticut and across the country, and I'm glad for it. I think it's important for those allies to realize that some of the changes that are necessary to overcome systemic racism involve changing the way that white people live as well. It's not just about police reform. It is also about housing reform and zoning reform and education reform. Remember, zoning was invented as a mechanism to separate white people and black people. The first zones were black zones and white zones. Now, today, it's different, and it doesn't look overtly racist. But, you know, when you only allow for people to build houses in a Connecticut suburb with a two-acre lot, well, then you're not giving much of an opportunity for a low-income family of color to move out of the north end of Hartford or the east end of Bridgeport. And so even what look like race-neutral zoning today has implications that further solidify the separation of families of color and white families. And we have to admit that and take a look at reforms that will remedy that.
How are the prospects for police reform looking in the Senate? I know Democrats have proposed the Justice in Policing Act.
I'm hopeful. The House has started their hearings on the policing accountability reforms already. We've unveiled a bill, Senate Democrats. And then Senate Republicans are reportedly working on their own package of reforms, led by Tim Scott of South Carolina. Listen, they're not going to have as broad a array of reforms as we will, Republicans versus Democrats. But the fact that they're working on something and the fact that it may allow for a negotiation to take place is encouraging.
Well, there's been that dichotomy. There's some people say that reform has been tried and it hasn't worked. So now we need to defund the police. Meghan McCain on The View a few days ago admitted that she didn't quite understand what people meant when they call for defunding the police. How do you understand that concept? And do you agree with Joe Biden's position that it's not a good idea?
Well, I think it probably does mean different things to different people. Obviously, I don't support pulling all funding from police. What I do support is making sure that our police departments are treating people with respect, regardless of the color of their skin. What I do support is taking a real hard look at whether we have given too many resources to police at the expense of, you know, social services that might actually lead to safer communities. One of the things that I think is important is to get our police out of our schools. I just don't think there's any role for police in schools. Security guards, sure, but police, especially in schools with lots of students of color, end up arresting those students for misbehaviors that in a white school might just be met with detention. And so I think that there is a really important conversation to be had about accountability for police and shifting some resources away from law enforcement to social services. But certainly I haven't met a single member of Congress that supports pulling all funding for police. That's ridiculous. Having a conversation about how we use that money and whether some of that money is better spent in other places, that's a perfectly reasonable conversation to have on the streets.
Switching to election issues, with 47 seats, Democrats are 4 seats short of an outright majority in the Senate. Now, the Cook Political Report says states like Colorado, Maine, Arizona, North Carolina could potentially be in play. If you were a betting man, would you bet on the Dems being able to take the Senate in November?
I would place a bet on Democrats winning control of the Senate. I just think people have watched the Senate Republicans, in particular Mitch McConnell, cower in the shadow of Donald Trump for 3 years, and they don't want a day more of it. I just don't understand, you know, why Republicans don't speak out when the, you know, president is, you know, using the White House megaphone to suggest that a 75-year-old man deserved getting pushed down onto the pavement to the point that blood was coming out from his ear. I don't understand why they don't raise objection with U.S. military being turned on peaceful protesters in the nation's capital. And so I do think people are going to be interested in wholesale change. My worry, frankly, though, is that we don't have a free and fair election. We're talking today on a Wednesday on Tuesday in Georgia, we saw 4-hour to 5-hour lines to vote in black neighborhoods. Why? Because Georgia closed down dozens of polling places in communities of color to intentionally make it hard for those people to vote.
And that's on the backs of what happened in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I think that there's going to be a real change in power in Washington. But I think that can only happen if we actually have the ability for people to vote, and I worry about that.
And voting is administered on the local level. So what can be done at the federal level to help make sure that everyone gets a chance to vote in November?
We do have a ongoing legal campaign right now trying to force states to reopen polling places, trying to make sure that the ability to cast an absentee ballot or a mail-in vote is available. So many of us are involved in a pretty comprehensive legal strategy, even if we can't be, you know, inside the Secretary of State's office in Georgia trying to fix the problems that have been created there. And of course, in Connecticut, we've got to fix our own voting system. The legislature is also going to take up in their special session an absentee voting law that would allow every citizen in the state to cast an absentee ballot, because we know COVID's not going to be gone by the fall. So every single Connecticut resident should be able to vote by mail, and we're going to try to make that happen for this fall's election.
Last question, and I thank you so much for your time. Fortune 500 companies have not been able to put out statements extolling their solidarity with Black Lives Matter fast enough in the days after George Floyd's death. What have you noticed in the Senate chambers? What have you noticed in the culture, in the climate of your workplace?
I mean, not a lot of change, in at least from one side of the aisle. You know, it used to be that an issue like voting rights was a nonpartisan issue. Republicans and Democrats supported the Voting Rights Act because we knew that there was still a, you know, quiet but forceful campaign to stop Black people and people of color from voting. Now, an issue like voting rights is a partisan issue. I can't find a single Republican to vote to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act that was passed during the Johnson administration. So I fear that, you know, things are not changing. You know, Donald Trump crows about the fact that 8% of African-American voters voted for him. I mean, A, that's, you know, abysmal that the president is bragging about 8% of African-American voters voting for him. But I also don't want to live in that world. I mean, I don't want to live in a world where Republicans have just given up on the votes from voters of color. I want them to compete for those votes. And I don't see that yet. That, I think, would be a really important development, to have Republicans and Democrats trying to win the votes of African-Americans throughout this country. And maybe if Republicans do come to the table on a police accountability bill that's real, that's substantive, that might be the beginning of that new reality. I think that'd be important.
Senator Chris Murphy, thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it.